The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
Just kind of some background of my church. On Sunday mornings, we have about 50 to 60 people worship at our church. And, you know, on a good Sunday, maybe we'll bump up past 60. On a bad Sunday, we may be 40, 45, you know. So just kind of the idea of my church. We are actually the oldest church in Raleigh. They've had a few name changes throughout their time, which has kind of skewed whether people think we're the oldest church or not. But we just celebrated last year around 219 years old is our church. So now the oldest church is one of the smallest churches in Raleigh. And so the facility that we are in right now, it was built in 1949. And I tried to find the picture and I couldn't find the picture. Like, if someone was wanting to plan a church in Raleigh, they want to plan it where we are. But the picture taken in 1949, it was trees and farmland all around our church. Well, obviously, that's not what's around our church today. And so what happened was the city changed, but our church never did change. So when I stepped into the church, you know, 3 years ago, I knew I was taking over a revitalization church. I knew I was taking over what we would consider technically a dying church, because around 80% of my congregation is retirement age. And so I've done 6 to 7 funerals already in the 3 years that I've been there. And so what the problem was they were trying to reach a community that were no longer there. They were trying to reach farmers and more outskirts type of neighborhoods. When the people around them were white collar, were very affluent, wealthy. These were very different than what the people they were trying to reach. And so the median average income around in a 1 mile radius of our church is around $150,000. That's the median income of our church, or as far as the income around our church. That's not the median income of our church. It made our budget a whole lot different than what it is today. So I come in, I'm like, okay, why is this church not? Why is this church literally around 50 people when within a 1 mile radius of our church there's 15,000 people? Like 15,000 people within a 1 mile radius of our church. Like, how are we at 50 people? You know? And so I began, you know, my first year is just really trying to figure things out. Like, who are these people? Build relationships. And so as I began kind of to work through the process of our church, I began to realize that, well, we want, you know, all the people in the church have honestly just grew up in that area. They were just kind of the area grew around them. So if they were to move out and try to move back in, they wouldn't be able to afford the area. But they just grew up in that area when housing was affordable and everything. My wife and I actually tried to move into the area of the church. We couldn't get within $150,000 of a price range that we could fit into. So we had to move out a little farther out than what we wanted, but still close enough to where we feel comfortable with still being our community. And so they think everybody still looks like them, is income still like them, which it's not. And so the challenge that we have faced, or that as leadership in the church, is helping them change their focus and target to who we're trying to reach and really what's around the church. And so I don't know if a lot of you can probably relate to these things. Like, and listen, like my church, I'm not here to tell you like we're at 50 to 60 and when I got there, you know, we're blowing the doors open now. We're not. Like, I'm not here to say like I hopefully in a few years, like I'll be able to tell you, man, we're growing at a good place. We've grown 3 members in the 3 years that I've been there. You know, I'm not here to tell you that everything that I've done has blown up and everything's been going gravy. No, like I went on a mission trip to Russia this past summer, and I got the most opposition that I have gotten in my church about my mission trip. Because they're saying we're just helping pay for the pastor's vacation and all this stuff, and I had to fight those battles in the church and help them to see, no, is part of what we're talking about here. No, we're a church for the nations, and we're going to go to the nations and the nations in our community. We're going to be loving to them and help reach out to them. Now, getting them to that point, I'm just going to be honest with you. It's a struggle right now. I'm actually still in the struggle. It's not like we're through it and we have a little struggle, but we're seeing a lot of things happen. I'm honestly still in the battle right now. And so I want you to know that. I don't want you to look at me and it's like, man, he's doing everything right and we're blowing up. You know, we're not. We're not at all. But one of the things that got cut there. One of the passages that just really stood out to me that was helpful, and I just preached through this sermon series. I preached on the churches of Revelation, and the church that one I wanted to focus on with my church was the Church of Philadelphia. The reason why, now our church probably fit into a lot of these different churches, but the one I wanted it to resonate with our church was the Church of Philadelphia, and just mainly because Philadelphia was a small but faithful church. God, the size of their church didn't matter to God, but their faithfulness did matter to God. And I'm just going to read that section. It's 7 through 13, and so it won't take long. It says, "Write to the angel of the church in Philadelphia, thus says the Holy One, the true One, the One who has the key of David, who opens and no one will close, and who closes and no one will open. I know your works. Look, I have placed before you an open door that no one can close, because you have but little power, yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. Note this, I will make from the synagogue of Satan, who claim to be Jews and are not, but are lying, I will make them come and bow down at your feet, and they will know that I have loved you, because you have kept my command to endure. I will also keep you from the hour of testing that has come to the whole world to test those who live on earth. I am coming soon. Hold on to what you have, so that no one takes your crown," which he's talking about the gospel there. "The one who conquers, I will make a pillar in the temple of God, and he will never go out again. I write him on the name of my God, in the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from God, and my new name. Let anyone who has ears listen to what the Spirit says to the churches." And so what we see in this passage is that according by all standards of culture, this would be a very unimpressive church. It's a small number of church. They probably had very little influence at that in some instances in their culture. But yet God was pleased with them because of their faithfulness. Mm. And that's what I've tried to relate to my church. And even pastors of small churches encourage them. God may never make us the next Summit. You know, God may not make, we may be 100 to 150 person church, but if we are faithful to trying to reach our community and always adapting and changing to the changing community around us, not changing our message, but changing to where we can effectively reach our neighbors, then God is pleased with that work because we are being faithful to what God has given us. And that's what we see in the Church of Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia is interesting because of the seven churches, there are two churches that God doesn't rebuke, and Philadelphia is one of them. And they were honestly the smallest church out of all of them. But yet God found them faithful. And so what we see here is that the mark of a healthy church is not its size, but its faithfulness. And that's what I've tried to relate to my church. Like, listen, you may be small, but a lot of times small churches are unhealthy churches in a lot of sense. Just because we're small doesn't mean we have to be unhealthy. And so I was like, if we're small, let's be healthy. But in a sense, being small can be a benefit. You should be able to move and to adapt quicker than bigger churches can. If the target moves, you should be able to move and shoot at the target a lot quicker than a bigger church can. So we're going to talk a little bit at the end about how you can use your smallness to be a benefit for you and your community, to be able to adapt and to move quicker in your community. But there was a few characteristics of the church in Philadelphia. It said they were faithful in doing the gospel work. And so in that phrase, in that section, talked about God gave them open doors. And every time open door is used throughout the Old Testament, it's talking about an evangelistic opportunity. And so God gave them open doors. And why did he say they were faithful to use those open doors? And so they were faithful in doing gospel ministry. The gospel was first in this church. Even though they were small, they wanted to influence culture as much as Rome was influencing culture. They wanted to be the main influencers, and so they were taking every open door opportunity they had to influence their culture. And then they were faithful in just sharing the gospel. The church, it said the church didn't deny the name of Jesus. And so what we see here is that they had open doors, but yet they took advantage of those open doors and they shared the gospel. And those were really the two marks of that small church. And so when I was preaching this to my congregation, I was like, do these things mark us? We're a small church, but are these things marking us? And if the gospel is center to everything that we're doing, then in reality, we're being faithful. And that was, for my church, at first, my main concern. Are we being faithful to what God has called us to do in that? Now, there's several tools and there's several resources that I've tried throughout my 3 years. Some have worked, some have not. But I'm going to kind of go through all of these with you guys and just kind of show you what I've done. At the end, you can ask questions. Honestly, if you're in a small church and you've done something that's worked, you know, share it with the group. You know, we're all in the same context and we're all working together, and we're all wanting to reach the community around us. And so one of the first things that I said was a problem with my church was that they didn't know the community around them. They thought the community, they think they had a grasp of the community, but that community was long gone and a new community was built. And so one of the things that I got from the state convention, which any church can do this, and some of you may have already gotten it, but it's the church profile, okay? So if you talk with anybody from the state convention, they can at least point you in the right direction. I worked with every area has a mission strategist who I work. John Davenport's my area strategist, and he helps me understand my demographic and what's around me and how I can effectively minister and reach out to the lostness around me. And so what they do is they have a huge printout of a church profile. They'll do, for us, they did a 1 mile radius. They can extend it out. If you're more in a rural area, they can extend it out farther out. It basically gives you any and every percentage that you would ever want to know about your community. It tells me the ethnic background of my community. It tells me the median average income of my community. It tells me, you think of it, it's in here, okay? And so what I used this for was to bring it before my church. I brought it before my council, and I asked them, I was like, who do you think is in our community? And then I was like, okay, here is actually what our community looks like. And so I begin to show them what the diversity looks like in our community, that the greatest number of the greatest highest percentage of ethnicity in our area is actually Korean. And so then after Korean, it's Hispanic. Okay. And so I was like, we actually have a Korean school that's not a part of our church that meets with us on Saturday mornings. And we started thinking through, how can we impact them for the gospel? You know, and we're still continuing to trying to make inroads with that. But all that came from was just a simple church profile that you can get from the state convention. And honestly, work with your regional strategist in your area. Every area in North Carolina, I think, pretty sure, has one. And so mine, John Davenport, I probably meet with him once a month, and we talk through everything that we're doing, and he kind of gives his input. He prays with me through our strategies and stuff like that. He's honestly been so valuable to my ministry, and it's just great because he's brought things to my attention. I'll bring up one of the things because of something he said that we started to do, and it's had a really good impact in our community as far as just starting to build relationships with them. But use the church profile. It took me about 2 weeks to read all of it because you see how thick it is. But it has some great things just going through just what people like in your community. Like, are they social driven? Or do they like to give to social initiatives? Just stuff like that, which has helped us know, okay, what can we do to really partner with these people and to start building relationships with them. And so in that, they started to think outside of themselves. Because one of the main problems that my church had when I got it was that it was always about, well, how can we make church better for us? You know, how can we do things that are accustomed to my preferences? And so now, because of this, and because we started to work through some other things, we started to think through things. Okay, so if we have a white-collar, very affluent, very wealthy community directly behind us, what are things that we can do to really impact the lostness in there? Now, I'm just going to be honest with you. Trying to reach wealthy, affluent people is extremely hard. It's extremely hard because they're doing fine. They don't think they need God because they're doing incredibly well on their own. They're in a million-dollar house, and our church is not a million. Like, our church property is valued at a lot, but our church itself is very humble. Like we have an aging facility, and the problem that we're having to battle is that typically people will only fellowship at places equal to or better than what their home is like. So there's a problem there with our church, right? Because we have a very affluent community whose homes are immaculate and nice, and our church is broke down. Like, we've had to replace a few units. Our church has walls have cracks in the sanctuary. So we've had to think through what ways can we just make little improvements aesthetically that will be a little bit more eye-pleasing to our community. And so those are things that we had to think through, and it all came from discussions of what is our community like around us. And the church profile has been a huge tool that we have been able to use in that response with my leadership, and just thinking through, okay, farmers are no longer around us. You know, we have white-collar businessmen around us, and there are apartments. So it's an interesting dynamic with us. We're starting now to target multi-housing units to try to reach that, and that's where all the ethnicity in our area is in the multi-housing units. And so that's where we're trying to reach out to them now, and we're starting to work through a lot of things there. And so from this kind of, I had this idea. It's like, well, how can we get our community involved, even if they're not coming to our church, but how can we begin to work with our community? And so John Davenport, who's my strategist, brought to my attention, you know, everybody in your community will give to social efforts. And so I began something called Reach Raleigh about 2 years ago. And Reach Raleigh is a missions week to our community. But what I did was I wanted our neighborhood to partner with our missions efforts. Now, our neighborhood is lost as can be, but I wanted them to help us in certain aspects of this ministry. And so what I did was started a food drive. And so what we would do, we would go around and knock on the doors of our neighbor, around 300 houses that we would knock on directly behind the church. I got Harris Teeter to donate 300 grocery bags. And we just knocked on the door and just said, hey, we're with Creemore Road Baptist Church. We're doing a food drive for the people in need in our community. Would you be willing to partner with us in that? And every single person that actually answers the door says, absolutely. And they take a grocery bag, they fill it up with groceries, and then they put it on their front doorstep a few nights later, and we come by and pick them up off their front doorstep. But after we give the little, like, hey, would you partner with us? Then we just easily just ask them, hey, is there anything we can pray for you about? And just we just finished it about 2 weeks ago. We do it typically that first week in August. And we've had a person open up to us about, you know, I just lost my wife. Would you please pray for me? So we were able to pray for them on their doorstep. There was a man who came to us and said, hey, my coworker has just been given a diagnosis of terminal cancer. Would you please pray for him? And so we were able to pray for him, for his coworker on his doorstep. Now, none of those people have come to our church yet, but we've been able to make engagement with them. Mm-hmm. And that's the key for us right now, because I won't get into all the history of our church, but our church had a bad reputation in the community because there was a lot of infighting over the years, and people just were like, they're just a church who fights, and that was the stigma of our church in the community. So we're having to go into our community and change the appearance and the stigma of our church. And so in that, for 3 years now, we just finished our third year, our community, we knock on the same 300 houses, which are the 300 houses that are directly behind our church. And they are like, oh, y'all are doing, hey, and I know the names of my neighbors now because of this. And as I walk through the neighborhood during lunch sometimes, I'll see Keith Urban. I know his last name because he's like, it's spelled the same way as, his name is Frank Urban, but it's the same way as Keith Urban. And so, Keith Urban. Keith Urban does not live in my neighborhood.
I want to learn how to reach Keith Urban.
Yeah, I have no idea how to reach Keith. And so I know my neighbors now, and now they know us. They know, okay, that's the church who does the food drive, and they care about their community now. And they're not the church now that is infighting. Now, thankfully, tons of people are moving into our community, and I'm going to be honest with you. It's great for us because they have no knowledge of our church. And I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah, that I know of. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, that's good for us. That's good for our church that God has brought in a mass load of people that have no knowledge of what our church has been like in the past. Now, we don't have that infighting now, thank God. We're trying to work through things still, but we're able to start building some. And now people are like, they're the church that does the food drive. They're the church that does the outdoor movie night for our community. They offer fun kid stuff. They offer fall festivals. They're so nice there's having a different perception of our church because of the engagement that we're trying to do in our community. And that was the vision that I had cast to the church. I'm like, I didn't tell the church, like, hey, people in the community think y'all are crazy. But I told them, I was like, hey, we need to be known in this community that we love them and that we care for them and that we seek to take care of those who are in need in our community. And so we dedicate 1 week that we just blitz our community for the gospel and to show that we love them. And so we do the food drive. We go to the walking and running trails, and we hand out free water with our logo on it and just say, hey, free water. People were taking pictures of us and putting us on Instagram and Twitter just saying, this is the nicest thing. There's a guy on Twitter that retweets all sorts of just philanthropy stuff, and they were trying to get us on that. And so we just had a lot of gospel conversations because people would just stop and just talk to us about, why are you just handing out free water? Because it's funny, I guess people do that and just charge people like a dollar for it, because they do it all the time, because they stopped and was like, well, how much is it? We're like, it's free. Like, they're like, oh, people charge us all the time and just kind of, because they know we don't have water. And it's like, no, this is just free water. Like, Jesus loves you, you know? And so we had a lot of conversations and just some great conversations from that. But it was because we needed to change the perception of our church and our community. And so in that, I wanted to cast that vision to my church, like, hey, we need to be known for this. We cannot be known for the church that, I don't want to be the church like, yeah, we don't really know anybody from that church. We don't really see them do anything. If someone in our community, in the neighborhood that we're in, Brookhaven, says that they don't know us, and that's an issue. That's an issue for me as a pastor. I want my neighborhood, Brookhaven, if nobody else knows us, Brookhaven better know us well. Because that's the community that we're planted in. And so we did the church profile thing. Another thing that I took them through is also through the state association is the pattern book. This is Imitating Christ. And so it goes through just simple things. How do you pray for the lost? How do you have gospel conversations? How do you have a missional mindset and all that? And there's a DVD and then there's a discussion time. And so we walked through this past spring with our people and just talking about how can we imitate Christ in our own lives? Because for me, like, I just don't, the problem that we were having was we were just doing church at church. How can we get outside of that and start doing church in your community? Be the church at home. Be the church at work. Be the church at the grocery store. Be the church at the restaurant. And so one of the things that we tried to do was, we did it one time, then the restaurants got weirded out by it for some reason. But Outback is just down the road from us. It's the place that our church frequents the most for after church lunch. And so I went to Outback and I'm like, listen, you guys serve us all year round. Let us wash your cars today. Free of charge, we're just going to wash your cars. And they just kind of looked at me weird. I was like, listen, I got 12 people outside. I can't send them away. So y'all just bring your cars around to the y'all just bring your cars around to the site and we'll wash them for you. Like, okay. And so they did it. And so the workers, the manager was freaked out, but the workers loved it. The workers absolutely loved that we just took the time to wash their cars for them. Now, we didn't wax or anything like that, but we just washed their cars for them, and the workers were so grateful. The next year, the manager kind of pushed me to the side, and we weren't able to do it again. And then I tried to do Hardee's because that's the next biggest place that our people eat at. And Hardee's, I couldn't get past them at all. So that's where we did the parks, and we started handing out water at the parks. But different areas, I know, like in Wake Forest, where I went to church before I became pastor here, the restaurants in Wake Forest were a whole lot more open to us than the restaurants in Raleigh. So your community, they may be very open to you doing that. Raleigh just seemed a little bit more closed off to that. But the pattern book is a great way for that we did just to kind of walk through everything in that. The next thing that we kind of did that I kind of walked my people through, I began to start to think through, okay, we have to get outside, obvious, but as far as a church service in itself, like, what are we doing there that could be hindering people? Because I don't know if you're like my church, but when we first were there, like, people visited and they never came back. I tried calling them, like, they just wouldn't come back. And so I went out and bought this little book. It's by Tom Rainer. It's Becoming a Welcoming Church. And in this book, he gives things that churches do that they don't know they're doing, but are hindering people from coming back to your worship service. And so I'll just give you an example of one that we were doing that was making it awkward for our guests. One of the things that he said is a very awkward time for a visitor in a worship service is a prolonged welcome time. Okay? Well, our church was probably the worst at it. So when I got there, I would say greet. Well, there was no timetable on when that would end. And so it could go on for like 5 to 10 minutes potentially. And so I would just be standing there and my wife would be sitting next to me and I would just be like, is this going to end anytime soon? Like, and if I was saying that, a guest probably was like, this is extremely awkward. And so with my leadership staff, I was like, okay, we're going to go through. I didn't go through all of them because I didn't want to like go all in on them all at once. But I did go with a couple of them at first. And the first thing was the welcome time. And so I was like, we need to change that. Because if a guest walks in and we have this prolonged time and they see this mass of people coming to them, we want to be friendly, but we don't want to be like this leech to them at the same time because that can be awkward for a guest. And so what we do, I'm like, hey, find one person that you can shake their hand next to and the choir is going to lead us in a song. And so people will shake their hand, but I stand down there and we start singing the song and then it's over in a matter of 10 or so seconds. So that was something that the people didn't want to give up, but we changed it to where it only lasted like 10 seconds to where it wasn't as awkward of a time for our guests in our in our service. And so we're still working through, listen, we're still working through kind of the worship areas and how we can make it a little bit more inviting for different ethnicities or even different age demographics. We're still working through all of that at my church. But this has been a really good resource for me to go through with my leadership just to help cast vision for, hey, we need to start thinking through not what pleases me in a worship service, but what is most effective for reaching out to our community. And so becoming a welcoming church by Rainer has been a huge part of us kind of gearing our worship service in a little bit different way. Now, we still have a long ways to go with our worship service, but we're kind of making small steps in getting there.
What are you doing differently? So
my worship guy, I found out, I didn't know this at first, but he can play the guitar, but he was just leading. And so he's leading from his guitar now. And we're singing a blend of worship and of hymns from the guitar. And so about a year and a half ago.
And you are a year and a half in.
I'm 3 years in.
But then you were a year.
I was a year and a half in at that point. So, yeah. So we changed it. I didn't get much. It wasn't a big enough change for them, really. No, I didn't get any flack from that. Yeah. Now, if we stopped singing, the only thing I got flack from in that one was I have a guy in the church that believes you should sing every stanza of the hymn, no matter what. And so so all seven verses of Just As I Am should be sang, you know. And so I was like, listen, I get what he was saying, because the hymn is telling a story in some of them, and you're cutting out this. Like, I get it. I was just like, listen, some of those songs will go on for 7 minutes and people check out after a few minutes, you know, with a certain song sometimes, especially some of the hymns, they'll check out. And so I was just like, you know, a verse or two of each, and we're flowing. And so there's no pause in it. The hymns are in the worship guide. So we just jump down to the next one. It's not, okay, now turn to page. We're not doing that as much in the worship service too. And so it's more, we're trying to flow it all together.
So you include one of the top 100 contemporary songs here or there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Yeah, I can do that. Yeah, we sing What a Beautiful Name by Hillsong. We'll sing 10,000 Reasons and stuff like that. So we'll sing some of those too with it. Now, I would say hymns are probably still the majority of what we sing, but we're in kind of bringing those others in too. Yeah. And so like you know, if you guys are in the small, it's a delicate balance to bring. You can't just open up the hose and just spray them down, you know. You have to bring it through little increments, you know. And so, but one of the things that probably the biggest change that I've made, and because this has been part of reaching our community, we started some home groups on Wednesday nights, midweek. And so we do first and third Wednesday, we meet at the church and do a Bible study at the church. On the second and fourth Wednesday, we meet in homes. And so the idea behind my home groups is that your neighbors may not come to the church, but they may come to a home group. Okay? And so I have people who haven't really verbalized that they disagree with it, but they don't participate in it, who would come on the first and third Wednesday. But I typically, on a Wednesday night Bible study, on just a normal Wednesday night at the church, would have around, let's say, 12 to 15 or so people show up for that Bible study and prayer time. On the home group nights, I'll have around 25. And so for a church our size, that 10's a big number for us, you know. And so it's worked, and we went through the pattern book during that season. And home groups, the pattern book is the Imitating Christ that the NC Baptists put out. And so we went through that about how to have gospel conversations, how to pray for the lost, how to do those things. And so the point of the home group is that we want to fellowship, we want to care, we want to disciple, and we want to multiply. That's kind of fourfold. And that's the vision that I gave to them, because I wanted to create different entry points for people to engage with our church that were not at the church.
Were they at different homes?
Yes. We started with two homes. Two homes. And so we had two homes, and there was about 12 to 13 at each home. So if the home got any larger, which they didn't last semester, and so this is the second semester that we were doing this, starting after Labor Day. And so if it gets any larger or close to 20, we break off, start a new home site.
So you had thought about having home groups, but not on Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
And
each home group has the ability to change the night that they meet on and the time. Yeah. So if the home group wants to meet on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, even Friday, like, they have the ability to do that. So my point was, whatever, like, this is an outreach tool and a discipleship tool for us. It's a way for us to be discipled in what God's word says, but it's also a way for us to reach our community. And so the home group, if you know you have people in your community that may come, but they work late on Wednesdays, move it to Tuesday, you know, or whatever that looks like. Or if you just think people are more available on Thursday for whatever reason, then move your home group to Thursday. Like just do that. Be intentional minded with this home group. Don't just have this mindset, oh, we're just fellowshipping with one another, which happened to an extent last semester, which I had to bring my leaders in. It's like, remember, these are missional, as long with being fellowship and with being discipleship, but it's also missional and intentional. And so in that, we want to use those as a different entry point than a Sunday morning or anything, or a Sunday school, because the only entry points to our people to engage with our church before our home groups was on a Sunday morning, really, in that time. But now, because of home groups and because of the way we set them up, it's another entry point for us to engage our community with the gospel and to invite people in it. Yeah.
How soon did they recognize that it was better for them to be?
The people who did it loved it immediately. The people who didn't do it are probably still skeptical of it. Just probably so. But we saw some, like, we put it in my neighborhood, and we had two of our neighbors come to it, to our home group, which was huge, because that's one of the reasons that we started in our neighborhood, because we've been able to build relationships with most of the people on our street, and we were like, most of them have never been to a church a day in their life, and they're kind of anti-church to an extent. They may not come to our church, but they would come to our home group.
Yeah.
And so that's why we started. That's my idea of home groups. I was like, well, the church can do this also, because if my neighborhood's like that, then many other neighborhoods
are
like
that. What's the furthest home from the church that you
go to? Let's see. Marty's house is probably a mile away from the church. And then my place was probably around 6 miles from the church. But the thing with Raleigh is Raleigh's a commute city.
Yeah.
And so it depends on your community. So this is context.
Yeah, we have people driving in from 12 miles.
Yeah. And so if you have communities that come to your church in certain areas, then put a home in that group, you know, in that area. You know, start a home group in that area. If mainly the people are right around the church, then start there, and as you multiply, you'll just start. So the whole goal of those home groups was that the home groups would be the way that we multiply the church, in a sense that as the home groups grow, the church is growing, you know. But it's more of doing life with people, because it's easy for people to come to church and you be friendly to people at church. It's a lot harder for people to actually want to live life with people and do discipleship that way. And so home groups was a way to maybe promote that type of lifestyle. It's more of, hey, you're my neighbor, why don't you come to my home group with me? It's more of doing life with the person and then having discussion. Yeah.
What's your curriculum and what's the structure of your home group?
All right. So last semester, we changed it up each time. And so last semester, we did the pattern book. This semester, we're going to go through Russell Moore's Storm Tossed Family And so we're each going to read a chapter a week, and then I'm going to have a, I'm typing up lessons for my other leaders. And so we're going to go through scripture and we're going to talk about the book. And so the idea around the Storitas family, the pattern book is really, it was a great book for discipleship of believers, but if a non-believer came into it, it would be totally foreign to them and they wouldn't be able to engage in dialogue. The Storitas family is dealing with the dynamics of the family and how to parent and how to grow as a family. And so if I invited a neighbor over to this Bible study, they could say, oh, you're talking about the family, you're talking about parenting. I struggle with parenting. Yeah, get me too, you know? And so it was a way for them to engage it. So I pick books or curriculum each semester that I think would be beneficial for our demographic and for my people. And so I don't have a set curriculum that I go for. Now we use Gospel Project on Sunday mornings, and I try to preach and bring something into the Gospel Project that we learn each week, just to bring connection and draw people to Sunday school also. So curriculum wise, that's what I've done, but it's really, I cater it to what I think going into that semester will be beneficial to the people who are in the home group and to the people we're trying to reach.
How long is each semester? How many weeks?
So the fall semester was from January till May. And then we take a summer break from June, July, August. And then September to the 1st of December, we'll go. And then we'll take a break through Christmas. And then we'll start back up in January. And so we give my host homes about a month break in December, and then we give them a 3-month break in the summer, and I just do a Bible study at the church in the summer, and so far it's been received well, and people have enjoyed it, and we've had more people because what I struggle with at my church, I would have people come to the service, but I wouldn't have people come to Sunday school and have the more intimate discipleship time, like if my people only came to hear me preach, they're not really getting the full effect of discipleship. And so I wanted them to engage more. So I was like, what can I create for them to get engaged in the Word and to engage in the Word more? Because if I can get them engaging with the Word, I believe the Word will do its thing. And so that's what I'm doing. So that's what I was trying to do. In a Storitas family, it's going to have a scripture that we're going to read. And then from the scripture, the chapter will be based on what that scripture is, and I'm kind of writing that as I go along. I've been doing that this summer.
So what's the format in terms of what time do you start? What time do you finish? What do you do?
Okay, so we do 6:30. We start, but it runs about an hour to an hour and a half, and so we start at 6:30. We have snacks. I've had one home group do a potluck one week where everybody just brought a potluck and they ate together. But most weeks it's just they rotate through somebody bringing a snack, and so they'll all pray over the food, and then they'll just have a fellowship time, just eating snacks, and that's part of the fellowship time. And then we'll sit down, and we'll have a time that I just ask, how is everybody's week gone? And this is the care aspect of the format, that it's like, hey, this week I've struggled at work, or this is a time for them to share, like maybe they share their faith with somebody, or maybe they're like, I tried to share my faith with somebody and it just blew up on me, or whatever. Like, this is a time for them to share their life at this time, and for us to know what to pray for about them, and to also know where people are struggling. Because that's one of the main things I wanted to do in our church is that, hey, like, y'all come to church, but nobody shares anything about their personal life. Like, you kind of know the person, but you don't know where they're struggling at. You don't know anything about this person. So I wanted to create an environment to, like, hey, it's time to share. Like, hey, are you struggling right now in sharing your faith? It's okay if you are. Like, everybody does it. Let's help get you past that point. You know, did you at work cheat to get ahead? You know, hey, this is a close-knit group. You know, it's a small group. Let's talk about that. You know, I wanted to create an environment where that happened. And then after that care time is when we dive into our Bible study. And so we dive into the Bible study, and then we go through all that. And then at the end, we pray. And if you have time for more fellowship, you can. If not, and then at my house, at my church, there's not many families with kids. It's my family and one other family right now. And so at our house is the house with the babysitter. So we pay the church pays a babysitter every month each month, and they stay. We have a room upstairs that the kids go to, and we have a camera that we keep in there for safety reasons and stuff like that. And so the babysitter watches the kids while we do the Bible study and stuff like that. But the babysitter is a Christian, and background checked and all that good stuff. And also the babysitter has a simple little lesson that she does each week with the kids also. And so I bought a little curriculum for that, and it's based on the Gospel Project and stuff like that. So that's kind of the way it flows for us on Wednesday nights. Now, it could flow in any way that you want it to, but that's just something that we started doing.
Would you say that was maybe one of the two most impactful things?
So far, yeah. That and our Reach Raleigh Week, the mission week that we do to our community. Those are the two biggest things that we have done that's made the greatest impact that we've done. And so those are the things that we've done that has been beneficial for us. And listen, like, everything is contextual. Like, I live in Raleigh. There's 15,000 people around me. Like, where you live, different things may work in a way, but these are things that I've just been doing to help create new vision for the church. It's like, hey, think outside of yourself. It's not about what I like in church, but how can we glorify God the most by what we do in this church? And it may mean changing up worship style. It may mean changing up the way we do Bible study, not doing it at the church as much, but doing it in our community. It may mean knocking on doors, but whatever glorifies God the most, we want to do, because we want to be like the church at Philadelphia and be faithful. And so in that, I've always told my church, like, hey, let our smallness be to our advantage. Like, smallness does not have to mean bad. It can mean good. So what I try to do, I tried, I'm still learning my constitution well and our bylaws. I have to know that well, because there's things that we've done, and I'm like, I knew what the bylaw said. I was like, well, we don't have to go through all these XYZ steps, because the bylaw says all we have to do is this. You know, because the problem is a lot of small churches have the bureaucracy of a million person church. And it's like, to change a light bulb, you have to go through eight committees or something, you know. And so what I've tried to do is learn my constitution to know, hey, these are things that we can do within the parameters that the church has set up. And then I can use that to maybe move quicker, because I know my constitution well. And so that's been helpful to me. And so just think through your context. Think through what you like, who's around you. If you don't know that, get the church profile. Get that and start to read through it. Take a couple of weeks and read through it. Like, it'll help you understand your community better. And then you can start getting a vision for how we can reach this community and stuff. Anybody have questions? And I kind of got mine done. Yeah.
The food drive you did, did you then make that available for people to come to the church to get it, or what did you do with it?
So what we did, we donated it to two places, okay? One is the Eastern Wake Food Bank that we donated to. There's another church close to us called the Point Church. And so they have a care pantry, and every Saturday they actually feed homeless people. And they have a specific list of groceries that they want, because they actually cook. And mainly it's a lot of pasta stuff and everything. So every pasta sauce type of stuff we send to the Point Church, because we sent to them because they'll get, like, grocery stores will donate stuff that they're about to throw away. And so they'll get a lot of that stuff, but we send a lot of stuff like that to them. And then we send the rest to the Eastern Wake. And then we do have a food pantry at our church, and we stock it a little bit with that. Eastern Wake Food Bank. It's over there, kind of by the Chevy GMC dealership there on Capitol, down towards downtown. So that's the one that's closest to us.
And you tell them
where you're going. Mm-hmm. We do tell them that.
Yeah.
And they can also sign up. You can sign up, go to the training, and then you can go there and pick up stuff.
Yeah.
Because my wife goes there.
She volunteer there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She goes every other Thursday.
Yeah.
And this way, you don't have people working at your church, opening your church, giving the eating. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying?
We donate it away.
Don't want to bother with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we've with the food drive, we've collected the first year around 1,000 pounds, last year around 1,200, this year around 1,300 pounds of food. And so the community has responded well to that. And it's been an open door for us to engage them a little bit more because people are less intimidated. It's like, hey, partner with us. We're not. Right. Well, you know, I don't have my spiritual survey that I'm going through that you need to answer. It's like, hey, partner with us in this, and they feel like they're doing something. They're helping us in the sense, you know. And so for our community, based on the church profile, that was something that we learned about our community. And they've really responded well. Now, as our church grows, I hope that we can hit more homes. That's the goal. But as of right now, I have about the same amount of people, and I have an older congregation, so they can't walk as good. So so we have to limit the amount of homes that we hit because of that. So, yeah.
If you could partner with the food bank, you could partner with Salvation Army, and you know, you just have to just go through training, and you could get stuff from them for your church. If you run a food pantry, or if you do a food drive, we do a food drive today, the second Tuesday of each month, and you know, we get hundreds of people that come, and they get a box of food and keep a food pantry at the church, and that's for the local community there. But you know, if you partner with them, you could go to these places and get stuff. You go shopping, just like going to Walmart or Food Lion and these places, and you could get stuff for your church. Even you could even buy meat.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's very, very inexpensive, but it's a great ministry. I mean, I know I was talking to Dr. Fisher earlier, but it's one of the things our communities that I live in a community that we have 600 plus multi-housing units, very poor, low to low medium income. And they're always hungry.
Yeah.
And the school there, I mean, we donate all kinds of cereals and stuff to the school because these kids go home on Fridays, and when they come to school on Monday, they're hungry.
How many days a week, how many days a month your church?
We do once a month, a food drive. But the pantry is open. We open it twice a week, every Mondays and Wednesdays. But you also donate to the schools. I mean, there's a lot of hunger in our communities, and I think that's one of the areas that we help out.
Yeah.
Babies, you know, diapers. People donate diapers. You know, donate diapers, wipes. We don't go with the formula because I mean, it's an issue with formulas. But diapers and things like that for babies. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of things you can do for the community. All you have to do is know your community.
Yeah.
You got to get out there into the community.
Yeah, to know the need.
And talk to the people.
Yeah.
I learned, you know, one thing. I'm taking too much time. Well, I learned to talk to the guy at the convenience store. They know the community.
Yeah.
And the guy at the convenience store can tell you a lot about the community, and that's where you know you get your insights.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to say, you said that they leave the food on the front porch and you just go pick it. Do you do any kind of follow-up at that moment, or did you just get food?
We at that point, we grab the food and just go. We don't want to knock on their doors too much because we don't want to offend them at that point. It's like, why are you knocking on my door again? So hopefully we have – so what we do, we follow up with the people that ask for prayer at the door. And so this past time was around – 15 homes of the 200 or something that we knocked on, 250, 300 that we knocked on. And we follow up with those 15 homes that wanted prayers like, hey, we as a church, we prayed for you on Wednesday night or Sunday morning or whatever. Like, hey, is there anything else that you need? And we just begin to follow up that way with them, whether to send a card or go knock on those doors again. But give it a week or so when we go back, week or two to go back and stuff like that. Yeah. Thank you guys for coming.